This is Sid Meier, and you're listening to Polycast, an official podcast of Apolliton Civilization Site.
Daniel Quick.
Makalua.
Imran Siddiqui.
Cardamandua.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Sid.
Sid will get an inside listen into how we do the show. Oh no, the secret's out.
Oh, I was telling everyone already. Oops.
You would.
Welcome to an extra shiny episode of Polycast, an official podcast of a Apolliton Civilization site. Polycast episode 50. This may rival the Girls Playing Civ Christmas special for the most popular Polycast episode ever. Rumor has it that Annalie and Mackie are annoyed. No, that's not true.
Aren't you glad, Sid, to know that you're competing with the Girls Playing Civ?
Sounds like worthy competition.
Oh, it is.
I'm Daniel Quick, known as Dan Q on the forums, and I'm joined by Mackie.
Hello.
Imran Siddiqui.
Hello.
Cartamandua.
Hi.
And someone named Sid Meier? Is this right?
That's right, Meier. M-E-I-E-R. Dennis is here, working the keyboard.
All right. Well, that was the good intro. Good intro, Dan.
Why, thank you. I practiced for many hours.
We can tell.
Since I did the introduction, I will leave it to my three fellow co-hosts to fight it amongst themselves who gets to ask Sid the first question. Yep, this should be entertaining.
Let's do Mackie, me, and Annalie.
All right.
Oh, let me guess, by seniority?
Yep, exactly.
Why am I always at the bottom?
This is a family-friendly show.
Oh, dear.
Sid's now thinking, gee, guys, that was great. No, I gotta go.
Yeah. Great, I had a great time. Thank you very much. I'd like to do another one sometime.
We begin our interview with Sid Meier discussing the Civilization series. Then we turn to Sid's complete and relatively recent gaming lineup, followed by strategy gaming in general. Lastly, a number of miscellaneous questions for the renowned game designer.
So you've just released Civ Rev, it's your first from the ground up remake of Civilization since the original, and with you doing most of the design work. Are you happy with the way it turned out, and how do you feel about the reception by the fans and critics so far?
I think I'm very happy with the way it turned out. We actually had a lot of fun making the game, and that's often kind of an indication that the game is going to be fun to play, but kind of coming back to Civ after quite some time was fun. Being able to rethink it, I think, kind of using everything we've learned over the last 15-plus years, but also being able to take advantage of all this great new technology on the consoles was a lot of fun. And also, kind of trying to reach a new audience was part of our goal here, people who really hadn't played Civ before. So that allowed us to change some things that we might not have changed if we were making a game for the hardcore fan base. It gave us some freedom, some flexibility to try new things. I think a lot of them worked pretty well. Few of them we might revise, but overall the experience was fun working with the team, kind of watching the game come together. It was always gratifying, and then it seems like a lot of people are having fun playing it, so that's the ultimate goal.
All right. Second question. There are reports that Civ Rev sold out within a day's of release in the U.S. First of all, congratulations to you and all Fraxons. Were you conservative in estimating demand, or did it exceed even your most optimistic projections? Can you tell us anything about actual sales numbers or how well Civ Rev is doing compared to Civ 4 in the same time period? And what do you think the reasons for Civ Rev selling out so quickly were?
I don't have any actual sales numbers, but our impression is that it's selling pretty well. As to what our expectations were, it's really hard to kind of know how things are going to work. You get a sense of whether a game is fun or it's not fun, but there's so many variables, so many factors that go into sales and how it's marketed, whether it has a short shelf life, a long shelf life, a lot of factors. But I think the kind of signs that we're seeing are quite encouraging. I thought our demo actually helped us quite a bit. There were a lot of people playing the demo. Our impression was a lot of people who weren't that familiar with the Civ concept, the Civ game, maybe had just heard the name but had never played it, had a chance to play the demo and kind of really came around to finding this was something that was fun, something that they wanted to try, and there was kind of just enough in the demo to give you a taste of what the game was like, but enough was kind of left for the actual product to really make you want to experience the full game. So I think the demo helped us a lot. Take-Two has been, you know, really generous with their marketing and their support of the game, so those things put together, I think, with a game that is fun to play, turned out to lead to some pretty positive sales. We're still in the early stages, and we'll have to see how things go, but right now I think we're pretty encouraged by the initial reaction.
CivRev is getting a lot of compliments for its intuitive controls and excellent interface, while the PC versions of Civ have never been known for doing that particularly well. Why do you believe this is? Is it a result of CivRev having a much more streamlined gameplay and therefore placing less demands on the controls and interface, or something else?
Well, actually, one of the first issues that we really explored when we first started to think about putting Civ on the console was, could we come up with a control scheme, an interface scheme that would make it work? I think the interface is so key to the game experience that we really had to answer that question before we even had a viable product idea. So we played around with controlling Civ through the controller, and we found that being a turn-based game, it lent itself really well to kind of the set of functions that you have available on the controller, the buttons to do a couple specific actions, the joysticks to scroll around and move things. So we were pretty well convinced as we started the project and looked into it and put a prototype together that the controls would work pretty well. In terms of the presentation of information, which is, I think, the other key part of the interface, that is helped somewhat by the fact that we pull the camera in, show you things in a lot of detail. There's some kind of key information that we can show you graphically as opposed to putting numbers up and things like that. And the last thing is we played the game a lot, and the interface actually went through two or three major revisions till we got something that we felt was smooth and streamlined and easy to play. And you know, it's gotten to the point, I think, where the game, I think, for us is as easy to play on the controller as it is with the mouse and keyboard. That was something that was very important to us, especially introducing the game to new players. These players who, you know, many of them very comfortable with console controller, would feel right at home and get into the game without having to, you know, kind of struggle with an interface. So we're real happy that people are finding the interface to be easy to use, but it was definitely a design goal from the beginning and one of the very first things that we worked on.
All right. Civ 4 had a level of moddability unmatched by previous titles in this series, and we've seen some amazing mod work being done by the community, some of which has in one form or another made its way into the official game through patches and expansions. On the other hand, Civilization Revolution is the complete opposite. It doesn't even have a map editor. What do you see as the role of modding in future Firaxis games, and will future games be more like Civ 4 or more like Civ Rev?
Modding has certainly added an incredible amount of energy and longevity and excitement to the Civilization series, and I think it's a very important part of the game and has created this, you know, fantastic community where everyone gets to not only play the game but also be a game designer every now and then. So I think it's added a large part to the Civ experience. Civ Revolution on the consoles is kind of a different world right now. The big guys, the Microsofts and the Sonys, are still kind of keeping close control of the networks and what you can put up there, what you can download, etc. In that world, modding is a bit more difficult. And with this being the first console product, we really wanted to focus on the gameplay itself and introduce the game that, as we designed it. You know, I think we would certainly like to take a look in the future at the possibilities of opening up the mod channel, but there's, on the console side, that's more complicated and involves not only us, but some other players. We certainly value that part of the Civ experience, and we'll have to see what the possibilities are going forward. You know, in terms of the PC Civ, I think it'll continue to be a really important part of the gameplay experience. It's just been fantastic. The interactivity, the interaction with players and fans and modders, and you know, I think ever since Civ 2, it's been a key part of playing Civilization.
Well, on a previous podcast, we were talking about the idea of having Civilization played on a hexagonal grid instead of the normal standard square grid, and wondering if that would ever be a future idea, or how did you get onto square grid as opposed to hex grid in the first place, considering it came from the board game genre?
Right, that's been a big debate for the last 20 years, hexes versus squares. The easy answer is with Civil Revolution. When you look at the D-pad on a console controller, it's clearly an 8-directional control. And I think squares are intuitively a little easier to grasp than hexes unless you grew up in the wargaming community. And for a game that is intended to introduce Civilization to a new audience, I think it made a lot of sense to use squares. We also have a lot of experience in terms of the shape of city radiuses and a lot of other things with squares. And, you know, I think we found over the years that the disadvantages of squares, you know, diagonal movement, etc., have not been really a big problem. Civ is not a game that lives or dies by whether you get a little extra movement here or there. That being said, I think that hexes have certain advantages. I think the stigma of hexes, which was really one of the issues for many years, hexes were associated with war games, which were associated with complexity, and were really something that was almost a code word for a overly complicated game. You know, does it have hexes? Ooh! So I think some of that has kind of faded with the years. But for Civ Revolution, it certainly made sense for a number of reasons to use squares.
Oh, okay. That's hip to be square.
Well, they are called hexes. I don't know.
No curses in the game. Now, you've been saying that for some time you were thinking about doing a Civ massively multiplayer online game, a virtual world of Civ. Can you be more specific about that? We know you can't comment on the concrete announcement of any game, if it even exists, but you've given the idea a lot of thought. What do you think it would take for a Civ-like MMO to actually work? And how does one go about translating what many consider a fundamentally single-player experience to a massively multiplayer format? And what would be the biggest challenges inherent in such a task?
I think you've kind of put your finger on the issue. Civilization is definitely an excellent single-player game. Works pretty well in multiplayer. When you start talking about MMOs, a lot of questions arise. I think as a designer, the idea of doing an MMO is very intriguing. I think anybody who's in game design, you know, sees it as one of the new frontiers in game design. And for that reason, MMOs are kind of intriguing to me. To kind of apply Civilization, treated in an MMO format, really does raise a lot of questions. The game works, you know, well as single player. It was originally designed as a single player game, and translating the ideas into MMO format, I think, would be challenging in a lot of ways. That's kind of discouraging in some ways, but as a designer, it's also kind of intriguing to see how we take Civ type ideas and make them MMO-ish. But really only one of kind of a bunch of ideas that are floating around, and given the kind of costs and challenges of MMOs, might not be the most logical thing to do at this point. But I think the Civ concept is pretty strong, pretty powerful in general, and it's really a question of taking the power of those ideas or the things that are really fun about Civ and finding a way to translate them into a different genre, into the MMO format.
Jerry the Third asked this question.
Hi, guys. Hi, Sydney. To what extent do you want Civ to reflect society? Thank you.
Well, that's an interesting question. In games, I think we're not really pursuing a particular agenda. I think, you know, in terms of reflecting society and saying, you know, this is good or this is bad. I mean, that's not our goal. I think our goal is to put the player into a role where they are having fun, where they're kind of get to lead a civilization, you get to be king, you get to direct armies, you get to build cities, you get to do a lot of cool stuff. So in that sense, it reflects the world, it reflects kind of historical concepts and things like that. But it's always been our goal as designers not to pursue a particular political agenda or something like that. We allow you all sorts of forms of government, and they're all kind of interesting at different times. You know, there's 16 different civs in Civ Rev, and they each have their kind of advantages and disadvantages, but no one of them is intended to be the one great civilization. We're really there to provide the player with a tool to explore a lot of their own ideas, a lot of their own strategies, a lot of their own preferences or things that they think are cool. So in that sense, we're providing a sandbox, kind of not really providing, you know, a philosophy particularly.
Question from Joe Soberk. Quote, how is historical research done for the game? Personally, I know very little about history, but Civilization is so detailed and the game continually raises my curiosity enough to research, so I've ended up learning a lot anyway. How is the quality control done on this? Unquote.
Well, in terms of research, we kind of have a joke around here that we do the research after the game is over, after the game is finished, to justify the various decisions that we've made in the game. But primarily, we have two goals. One is to let you start playing the game with pretty much stuff that everybody knows. I think people know that it might be good to, you know, invent bronze working or invent electricity or things like that. So we want you to play with your kind of general knowledge of the world and not have to read a 200-page manual before you can even start playing. Then as you get deeper and deeper into the game, I think we try and layer the concepts on in a way that you're not overwhelmed, but you're kind of drawn deeper and deeper into the strategies, into the different ideas that make up the game, so that you are kind of intrigued at a certain point to learn more about certain historical figures or certain important scientific concepts or whatever it is. But those aren't essential to playing the game. Game rules are fairly simple and straightforward. You don't need to do a lot of research to start playing the game, and then we make a lot of decisions in the game based on what we think is the most fun. We've always found that we can always find some historical incident to back up whatever decision we make in the game. So, you know, we kind of don't make a game based on a lot of initial research. We just use the research to kind of justify the decisions we've made to make the game fun at the end of the process.
Giant death robots.
Yes, we're giant death robots in ancient Mesopotamia.
I heard it was the Goa'uld from the Stargate universe that settled humans on this planet, actually.
That'll be Civ 18.
Well, you know, that's what the tank said when the spearmen took him out.
Oh, man. If I had a nickel for every time I've heard about that. Could happen, you know. That was, of course, Chuck Norris, the spearman.
So when you actually sit down and play Civilization, are you more of a builder or a warmonger? Do you have any particular civics you like?
As a player, I tend to start out as a warmonger, kind of run into a more powerful civ, become a builder for a while, and then kind of find some way to make a comeback. I think one of the things that's been most fun about Civ Revolution is really the ability to change course, to kind of rethink your strategy a number of times during the game and really respond and react to what the other civs are doing or what situation you find yourself in or what wonder you might have a chance to build or what artifact you find. There's so many ways that the game can kind of give you a new opportunity, a new option, a kind of a new thing to do, and being able to respond to that is kind of what I find the most fun about playing Civ Revolution. So my strategy is a lot based on what I find, you know, what path the game takes. For me, no two games are really the same because I'm kind of really responding to what other civs do or what the world provides for me. I've enjoyed actually playing in all the different styles, and I think one of the things we really worked on with Civ Revolution especially is to make all the different victory paths kind of interesting, proactive, and fun to play, but also not so limiting that you can't kind of change your strategy at different points if you really feel it's the thing to do. And my preferred government, I guess, really, again, depends on the circumstances. They're all kind of designed to emphasize certain abilities and limit you in other areas. So it's always a very interesting choice of what government makes the most sense right now and when is a good time to switch.
I mean, during playtesting, you didn't have a temporary text interface where you could type in, I'm Sid, and then everyone else just goes like, oh, okay, go for it. You do what you want.
No.
We're sorry.
We had a couple cheat, the plus 1,000 gold cheat, etc., just to get quickly through the game. But, I mean, I spent a lot of time playing the game and really playing it as it was intended to be played and to try and find things that were working well, things that weren't working well, and kind of experience the game as a player would. And that's really our process at Firaxis, is to have people play the game. And we had a Friday morning meeting every week. We'd all get together, kind of discuss what was working better, you know, what needed to be fixed. Which were the lamest civilizations? That was kind of our question, you know. And we'd pick the three lamest civilizations and just find ways to make them more interesting. Or what are the lamest units? You know, what are the most overpowered civs? So all those kind of questions were discussed week after week and probably tried two or three options for everything that ended up in the game. It's probably the second or third iteration of that particular advantage or unit data or whatever. They were all constantly being tweaked during the development.
All right. And Dan would like to know those cheat codes, by the way.
I don't think they ended up in the game.
You'll put them in a future patch just for me. Why, thank you.
The Dan Q patch.
He's also waiting for the pre-settler level so that he can actually win a game. Thank you.
course I get the next question. You'll understand when we get to the end of it. even aside from Civ, you've been revisiting a lot of your older games in recent years. Pirates, Railroads, and now Colonization, by the way. Last time you were interviewed by a set of Fulton was back in October of 2001 to talk about your then up-and-coming Sim Golf. Last title for Axis released that was not a sequel of an earlier work or yours, well, since then. There have been murmurs going around some people in the game community that you're no longer able to come up with great original game ideas. What would you say to such people?
Oh, man, come on.
That's why I didn't want to ask this question.
Imran, how could you?
Dan, you're the one that put it in.
Yeah, I'll get philosophical for a second. I think the industry is based on a combination of original IP and building on ideas that players like. It's not nearly a Sid debate. It's really an industry debate. Do we need more original titles and original IPs, or do we want the sequels and the expansions and things like that? And I think the answer is people want both. You know, I think if you liked a game, you want to see the next version of it, but every now and then you want to play something brand new and fresh. So I'd like to claim that I've provided both of those things, that if you go back for the last 20 years, there have been quite a few original ideas and IPs. On the other hand, we've taken the ideas that people really like the most and have been asking us to redo and have redone a lot of them. And I think in many cases, I think Civ Rev being a good example, we've added a lot of new things. We haven't just recreated an older approach to the game, but really thought about what we've learned and what the community has kind of asked for and input and ideas from the community and combined them all together to make something that is still called Civilization, but has a lot of new and fresh ideas in it. I think that we're trying to make the most fun games that we can and bring the most fun to our players, and sometimes that involves something brand new. Sometimes it involves building on things we've already started. I'm pretty happy with the games we've done. I have no regrets about the amount of new stuff we do versus the amount of building on past ideas.
All right. Thanks for not killing me.
I do think it is a good question, but I think it's a debate within the entire industry.
Great. Moving on. Can you provide us with any hints about any new intellectual property you're working on?
We cannot really provide you with any hints.
Knew that was coming.
Sorry.
What about colonization?
Colonization is awesome.
All right, it's good enough for me.
You sure don't ask him about dinosaurs, Imran?
I was disappointed, but that's okay.
It's not totally extinct yet, but
Maybe someday
we'll do that.
So can you provide us with any hints on any not real intellectual property? Just put a rumor out there, throw people off.
Frankly, we don't even know. Our development process is to play around with some ideas and put a prototype together, and maybe it's fun, maybe it works, and maybe it doesn't. So we're kind of in a stage right now where we're tossing around ideas and things like that. Problem is, once you mention a name, community develops, and it's very hard to change your mind about things. The dinosaur game's a good example. You know, we talked a lot about that, and then we didn't make one. People are still unhappy with us for doing that, so we have to be circumspect about what ideas we talk about.
For more information on dinosaurs, visit apolton.net/dino.
Just encourage them, Dan. Very good. Sophia wrote in and wanted to know, what were your goals in designing Alpha Centauri?
Well, Alpha Centauri really was Brian Reynolds' design. The concept was to take a lot of the ideas that worked well in Civilization and place them in a science fiction setting. And I think that allowed Brian to really introduce some new ideas that were a lot of fun. It was an experiment to see where the basic Civ ideas could go and how they would work in a different setting. People really enjoy that game. We still hear about people who would like to see another Alpha Centauri. So I think in a lot of ways it was a success. It kind of allowed us to stretch Civ in some new and interesting ways while keeping, you know, hopefully the one more turn going.
I could use a few more one-one turns of Alpha Centauri, very much.
All right.
Okay, question 13, since Mackie jumped right in front of me there.
Alpha Centauri questions are all that belong to me.
Oh. Civ is famous for being a game that MicroProse wasn't terribly interested in at the time, and that you really had to fight to get them to agree to see Civ 2 made. Is this indicative of how hard it is to sell game ideas to publishers? How are your experiences with this with more recent games, such as since Firaxis became a subsidiary of Take-Two Interactive in late 2005? And have any cool concepts been rejected in recent years that you can talk about?
It is true that the initial Civ was a hard sell. Within MicroProse, I think it at the time there was very little strategy games on the PC, and the ones that were there were kind of hardcore, you know, hex-based simulators and things like that. So strategy had a reputation as being kind of complicated and esoteric and not easy to play. For that reason, Civ was regarded with some concern, and when it was initially designed, I think Civ 2 also had some concerns, but I think the team that made it, you know, really believed in the product and felt it was a fun game, so it wasn't really that terrible issue, but it was true that we had to kind of make the world safe for strategy gaming with Civilization. Again, you're kind of getting back to this question of one of the big philosophical questions of the industries, you know, designer versus publisher. And again, I come down squarely in the middle. I think publishers have to make money, and without money, there are not going to be any opportunities to design games, so they certainly have a valid point of view in terms of managing risk and perhaps it not being wise to fund every crazy designer out there with an idea. On the other hand, the industry moves forward based on creative design ideas from game designers, I think. Being intelligent, being smart about creating those opportunities and then making the most of them is the publisher's role, and that's the challenge, is really to know what ideas to support and which designers to encourage. I have to say that we've had a really positive relationship with Take-Two, and they've been encouraged our creativity. Really have not said we're not interested in that idea or we don't want to go that direction. Been a very fruitful partnership. I think we've been able to do some great games with them.
So let's move on to a question about strategy gaming. The first one is given to us by Thadian, who asks, while human AI is not entirely possible, what extent in the future do you think that the AI of strategy games are capable of analyzing and making on-the-spot decisions that reflect the situation, possibly outcomes and means of advancement? A human is always thinking about these things. What do you think can overcome the obstacles in designing this?
Well, I think you've hit on the third philosophical question that haunts the industry. I think that actually single-player AI is kind of a different question. The goal is really not to create a multiplayer experience or to create the same experience that you have playing with other human players, at least in my mind. With AI, I don't think we're trying to create an artificial human in a multiplayer game with four players. You're going to win on the average one time out of four. In a single-player game, if you win on the average one time out of four, you're going to stop playing. It's just not satisfying. So the AI's role in a single-player game, I think, is different from the human player's role in a multiplayer game. It's not really our goal to create an AI that thinks like a human being. Our goal is to create an AI that creates the most entertaining experience for the player. There's some kind of subtle differences, I think, between trying to do those things, and many of them are secrets of the game designer. But I think the bottom line is that if the AI were too human, I think it would start to detract from the enjoyment of playing single player. Our goal in creating AI is to create the most interesting experience for the player. The leaders in Civ Revolution get really annoying after a while, and that is deliberate because it makes it so much more satisfying to take over their civilizations and win against them. I guess most multiplayer players are also annoying, but there's certain goals that we have in creating AI and creating character and personality in the AI leaders, etc., that are designed to make the single-player game a lot of fun to play.
In a recent interview with Gamasutra, Soren Johnson has spoken about how Spore will bring strategy back to the casual gamer. Do you share his concerns that the strategy genre is following the path of flight simulators, with games being targeted more and more to hardcore users, and that they're losing much of their mainstream audience along the way? Is the more streamlined gameplay of Civ Rev the future of strategy gaming and the very complex and deep mechanics of games like Civ 4 on their way out? Well, that was really long. Sorry.
I think there's a really strong audience for both approaches to gaming. When we look at the numbers for Civilization, it's not like the numbers are going down. There's a group of players that really enjoy the style of gaming in Civ 4, and that's just a great game for them. That's a level of complexity and detail that they want, and they enjoy playing that game. On the other hand, Civ Revolution is an attempt to really appeal to a demographic of gamers that's looking for a different kind of experience, different level of detail, a different amount of time, a different kind of entertainment level. And I think there's, you know, what's being proven is there's really an audience for both of those approaches to Civilization. So I do think that we do need to kind of every now and then refresh the genre. And if we didn't do Civ Revolution, I think that there might be a danger over time that we would start to lose part of the audience. But I think Civilization is a game that you kind of know going into it that there's going to be quite a bit of decision making, that it's not an arcade game, it's not a casual game. And I think the surprise of Civ Revolution is that we can bring this topic to players that haven't played Civilization before that might consider themselves casual gamers or mainstream gamers, and they're finding that the game is fun to play. And I think that we're actually taking players who didn't really know they were strategy gamers and kind of introducing them and convincing them that strategy really is a genre that they perhaps want to pursue in their gaming life. There's actually a lot of parallels with the original Civilization on the PC. You know, we talked earlier about how when Civ originally appeared on the PC, strategy game was kind of considered a weird little niche product that was very complicated and hard to play. Civilization kind of changed that perception. And I think, we're looking for Civ Revolution to, again, kind of change that perception that strategy games have to be complicated and kind of hard to play. And I think we know that strategy is the way to go and the coolest of the games. Every now and then we kind of need to refresh that idea and reintroduce that idea to the next generation of gamers.
I look forward to someone to be able to play a game of Civilization 4 on their computer and a game of Civilization Revolution on the console concurrently. That would be a good one.
Call in today.
In North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at The Polycast or email us at polycast@appolton.net.
For more information on Polycast, our sibling show Modcast, or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at polycast.appolton.net.
Now getting into some miscellaneous questions here. User-submitted question from Merg, who also goes by Kale. Quote, as a game industry veteran, what is your take on the controversy of violence in video games, unquote?
I think part of the strength of the industry is the variety of games that we have and the variety of designers and design approaches that are taken to games. On the other hand, we need to take some responsibility for the content of games and what message we're sending to players and kind of what values we're encouraging or discouraging. I have a son who's about to graduate from high school, and I kind of watched him grow up playing video games and the impact, the influence it's had on him. I think I do feel a responsibility as a designer to be able to be proud of the content that we have in the games, of the experience you have in playing games. That's just my personal opinion and style and approach to designing games. I don't think that we need censorship, but I think that as players, we make choices in the games that we play. As parents, we make choices in the games that we play with our children and what we expose our children to, and that's probably where the responsibility should be. I have a particular approach to doing games and their content. I think other designers have other approaches, and that's part of kind of what keeps the industry really vibrant. But I don't take the point of view that it doesn't matter what we put in our games or it's only a game. For there to be a really immersive entertainment experience, that we have to take responsibility for what goes into the games, and that's what I try to do.
Darzan also wrote in and asked us about, when you first got into gaming professionally, what were the reactions of people close to you? Were they supportive, or they were kind of hoping this was a passing phase, and I'll add this, you were going to get a real job?
Actually, when I started making games, I had a real job. I really did it on the side in my spare time, weekends. I was very lucky that in those days, I could basically make a game on my own. I didn't need to spend any money. I didn't need to hire a team. I did the art, the sound, the game design. I even duplicated the discs and put them in a plastic bag. So this was in the early 80s, and it was a very different world then, but it's really fortunate to be interested in gaming at a time when the industry was just kind of coming together. So I really didn't have to make a choice of quitting my day job and becoming a game designer. I kind of did both for some time until it kind of became apparent that the gaming industry might be hanging around for a while and there might be some ability to make a career out of it. I'd always been interested in games back to when I was a kid, so I think that basically there was no sense that this was a horrible mistake, but the ability to kind of ease into it without having to kind of burn all your bridges behind you, that kind of allowed me to do it in a sane and comfortable manner.
Next question is, your wife, Susan, is, quote, the empress of employee matters, unquote, at Firaxis, and a fellow Rutgers grad. You have great taste. What can I say? And your son, I got to give a shout out to the alma mater. What can I say? And your son, Ryan, has played Civ 4 at ApolloCon 06, at least. How much feedback do they give you about your game designs and gameplay, and how often do they play against you or with you in your games, or otherwise?
We solicit as much feedback as we can, and I think it's part of our style of developing games is to get as much reaction, as much feedback as we can from people that we know. Susan is very interested in me making a game which will create world peace. I'm working on that one in my spare time. But she has some big ideas about what games can be and really encourages us to think big picture about what we're doing. Ryan has played all the games, has been a good sounding board for what works and what doesn't work, and actually was my first multiplayer playtester on Civ Revolution and actually helped quite a bit to get things together from the multiplayer side, kind of being available to play and respond and react to gameplay things. So they've both been really important in being able to make games.
Sid, I notice you didn't tell us who won that game.
Well, we usually go out of sync after about a half an hour. Nobody would have.
What are your three favorite PC games that you have not designed and your company has not developed? If you could only take one of them with you on a trip by yourself to an exotic island, which would it be?
I think there have been some fantastic PC games made over the years. Part of what's kept me going as a designer is, in my spare time, play other games and get inspired by what other designers are doing. In terms of favorite games, I'd have to say probably the Age of Empires series has been a lot of fun. Pretty much anything that Blizzard has made, StarCraft or Warcraft or Diablo. Company of Heroes, I think, was fairly recently, a really well-made game. If I could take one, it'd probably have to be StarCraft. I think that's a game I could play over and over and over again.
I love that answer.
Yeah. Mackie's your biggest fan now.
Oh. Oh, I don't want to unseat you from your throne there, Dan.
And this podcast just went millions of downloads in South Korea.
Our last question then comes from the DS. That's not the platform, actually. That's a user, just in case we were wondering if the DS were rising up against their evil human masters. The DS writes, quote, "What question have you always wanted someone to ask but they never have? And what is the answer to that question?" Unquote.
I don't know. I always find it interesting when people ask about kind of little details of games. You know, why did you do this way, or... It's always fascinating to me what people read into games or what they actually pick up. It's amazing how much of what you put in the game they actually recognize and realize and pick up on, and how kind of intensely they absorb the game. So I really enjoy the questions about, you know, why did you make this unit a 3-2 versus a 4-2, or the kind of really detailed questions that if we're working on the games, every now and then we have to ask ourselves, is anybody going to ever care about this thing that I'm really sweating over today? To get those kind of questions that people ask, kind of a validation of the time we spend to get things right and to really care about the games and those months and months and years we spend on putting things together. It's very rewarding to get those kind of questions that really show people are playing the game and thinking about it and really kind of absorbing what we tried to create and getting a lot out of it. Those are the kind of questions that I enjoy being asked.
We know you're a very busy man. You don't have a lot of time to listen to podcasts, any podcast, but we know that you'll listen to this podcast and you'll think it's so cool you'll never listen to another one because, well, nothing could ever top it.
Exactly. I couldn't have put it better myself.
Woohoo!
We do appreciate your support and your really bringing this community together, and it's been a big part of the fun of Civ, so thanks to you.
You've been listening to episode 50 of Polycast, an official podcast of Polton Civilization site, with the wonder, the grandeur, the one, Sid Meier.
Bye.
I've also been joined by lesser beings such as Daniel Quick.
Yes.
Say goodbye, Dan.
Goodbye, Dan.
And my Karamandua.
I'm a lesser being. Bye.
I'm Maklua.
I'm greater than you think I am. Bye.
I fully believe that. And I've been Imran Siddiqui. Say goodbye, Imran. Bye, Imran.
This show is so weird.
Well, you know, I've been gone for 2 weeks, so, you know.
He's been storing up the weirdness.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, that's right, Imran, you're back. We never really acknowledged that.
You're back!
That's awesome.
That's what he gets for calling him a lesser being.
Thank you very much, Sid. Thank you also to Dennis for being in the background there.
Yeah, thanks, guys. This was cool.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
So you've just released CivRev, and you've said your first from the ground up remake of Civilization.
Which may, I'm going to have to edit this, what's the word I'm looking for? May run. Annalie. She dropped from the call.
Every single podcast this happens.
I was wondering why she wasn't saying anything.
Wow.
It's like, what, you didn't like those answers? By the way, I turned off my phone, so that aspect of podcast won't happen.
Thank you.
Did Dan get cut off too?
Yeah, he's got thunderstorms in the area. He warned us that might happen.
We'll get Dan back as soon as he comes back. But I guess, sorry about that, Sid. I guess you started to talk about it and suddenly...
Right. Right. I guess we shouldn't be thinking about MMOs.
Design Joseph MMO.
Right. And, yes, I'm back. No sooner I'd backed up my work than the power came back on.
Sorry, I got distracted for a second.
Right? Where did Mackie go?
I don't know. She's still on the call. Mackie.
Whoops, wrong button. Sorry.
I'm a little worried for you.
The next question is yours.
What are your three favorite PC games that you have not designed and your company has developed? Or, excuse me, has not developed. Wow, that would have been biased. If you could only take...
And could we ask one more very brief favor of you? Could you say, this is Sid Meier and you're listening to Polycast, an official podcast of a Bolton Civilization site?
Can you run that by me one more time? This is Sid Meier, and let me... I got that part. Good. Up to that.
Bye.
Bye, Sid. Bye, Dennis.
All right.
Yes, they've got five different streams that are going up and down, apparently, as connecting and disconnecting the Dennis to edit all together.
Yep, he does. Shh, what are they saying?
Yeah, they're saying something.
They have us on speaker. I feel dirty.
It's like Winston and Imran talking on the phone and flushing the toilet.
Okay, you guys need to settle down.
Who, us?
Who, what?
Yeah, why did you agree to join us again?
Sid Meier was coming.
Oh, that's it. He's done after. She's done after.
Coming in.
Oh, there's some other people that want to say hello.
Hi.
Hi.
That was awesome. I loved you.
That's what I wanted to say after the StarCraft question.
You guys are such geeks.
Yeah, you should talk.
Yeah, really. Maybe I should have said, you know, made it more interesting in question 10, been all like, yeah, I don't think you can come up with interesting games anymore, my old man.
Oh, I'm sure now that he's gone, you talk trash.
Oh, God, that's going to be in a cut blooper, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
We didn't ask if they'd like to come back.
Not for another 50 episodes, at least. Talk about you.
Date August 2nd, 2008. Sound clips copyright Civilization IV, The Warlords, and the Beyond the Sword expansion packs. Copyright 2008, Bolton Civilization site at bolton.net.